Deadlines, the Yemeni army conducts a warning strike to stop the illegal shipping of Yemeni oil by the Saudi-led coalition. The Taliban say they've killed several Daesh operatives who were involved in a recent bloody attack on a female school. Plus, China wraps up the Communist Party Congress with a resolution confirming the core status of President Xi Jinping. Welcome to World News from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you for joining us. Now, top story. Yemen's army says it has carried out a drone attack on a southern oil port to warn the Saudi-led coalition against the plundering the country's resources. The army spokesman says what he called the basic warning strike was aimed at preventing a tanker from looting Yemeni crude through an oil terminal in Hadramaut province. Yahya Sari says the vessel violated a ban on the transfer and export of Yemeni oil products. He also vowed more such strikes to prevent the plunder of the country's oil wealth. This is the first such incident since a UN brokered truce between Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement and the Saudi-led coalition came to an end earlier this month. The coalition launched a devastating war on Yemen in 2015. Our correspondent Yusuf Mawri says the Saudi-led coalition keeps plundering Yemen's oil wealth despite an agreement signed to settle the issue.
Well, yeah, the peace agreement basically ended military activities on paper. However, you still have much of Yemen's natural resources being looted by foreign nations under the government, most of which reside in Europe, and they're basically selling the natural resources, gas and oil, below international market price, and they're basically, these corrupt officials are making money under the table. And the message being delivered here by the Sana'a government is enough is enough, the game is over, no longer will Yemen allow its natural resources to be looted by foreign nations because of corrupt government officials being backed by Saudi Arabia and a Saudi-led coalition. And this is why the Sana'a government launched these two bomb-driven drones which targeted the terminal in the port of Adaba to basically send the message that if this Greek oil ship loads any oil or gas resources onto the ship, it's going to be targeted.
All five Iranian crew members of a Venezuelan cargo plane that was grounded in Argentina back in June have arrived in Caracas. They are among 19 crew members of a Boeing 747 cargo plane grounded over alleged violation of U.S. sanctions. Venezuela's transport minister has expressed happiness over the freedom of all crew members who he said were kidnapped by the Argentine judiciary. Argentina's judiciary, the plane had been sold by Iran's Mahan Air to Venezuelan airline Amitrasur, both sanctioned by the U.S. The aircraft carrying auto parts landed in the Argentine capital en route from Mexico on June 6. It was not permitted to refuel in Argentina, where authorities detained its crew on the request of a U.S. court. An Argentinian judge recently said the documents provided by the plaintiff were insufficient and invalid. Iran rejects Western allegations of transferring drones to Russia for the use in the Ukraine war and condemns what it sees as Europe's provocations over the issue. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani called the provocations destructive, saying Iran reserves the right to respond to any irresponsible move. He reiterated Iran's stance on supporting an immediate end to the Ukraine war through a political process. On Friday, the UK, Germany and France called on the UN to investigate the transfer of Iranian-made drones to Russia. They said the transfer violates a UN resolution that endorsed the 2015 Iran deal. Kanani said the trio is seeking to link its baseless allegations to that resolution in line with its unlawful measures against Iran. He also condemned the EU and Britain for their recent sanctions on Tehran over the same allegations. Russia has already denied using Iranian drones in Ukraine. The Taliban say they have killed the 6 Daesh members in an overnight operation in the Afghan capital, Kabul. According to the Taliban, the terrorists were involved in 2 major attacks in recent weeks. Both occurred in Kabul. One took place on September 30. It hit a girls' school, killing 53 people, most of them female students. The other occurred a week earlier. It hit a mosque, killing 7 people and injuring over 40. A series of explosions have rocked different Afghan cities, mostly the capital, since the Taliban took over the country in August 2021. Most of the attacks were claimed by Daesh. China's Communist Party has approved amendments to its charter endorsing President Xi Jinping's, quote, core leadership. Hours ago, the party unanimously passed a resolution on the changes as it concluded its 20th National Congress. It introduced a new central committee of around 200 senior party officials. The committee is expected to keep Xi as the party's general secretary when it meets on Sunday. That would pave the way for him to gain a third term as China's president in March, when the government's annual legislative sessions are held. Some 2,300 delegates of the Communist Party attended the week-long Congress, which is held twice a decade. Political commentator Andrew Leong says during Xi Jinping's presidency, China has gained significant achievements in terms of both economic growth and global influence.
Well, if you look at the Western media, they're all zeroing in on Xi's apparent grab on power and also more aggressiveness in the international arena. Continuing blackening China without paying any attention that the bulk of the Party Congress is about China's domestic governance, which is the pride of the Communist Party. Because under the Communist Party, the lives of the Chinese people have changed miraculously and over the past decades, especially under President Xi. The economy has grown, the GDP per capita has doubled, and China's influence is growing around the world. So there is no wonder that there is a considerable consensus, even though there are necessarily some dissenting voices, but they are in the minor minority. So the consensus in the party is that Xi is the man to take China to a higher plane. Higher plane meaning another milestone in realizing the China dream of becoming a modern socialist country by the year 2035.
Italy's far-right firebrand Giorgia Meloni has been sworn in as the country's first female prime minister almost a month after the parliamentary election. Meloni, alongside her 24-member cabinet, took the oath of office during a ceremony at the presidential palace. 5 of the ministers are technocrats, not representing any party, while 6 others are women. Meloni's Brothers of Italy party swept to victory in the election as part of a coalition that included Forza Italia of former Premier Silvio Berlusconi and Matteo Salvini's League. She announced her cabinet after weeks of negotiations with allies. However, the new administration has challenging tasks ahead as the country is grappling with issues ranging from high inflation and energy prices to relations with European partners. Italy is expecting a €21 billion COVID recovery package, which Meloni wants to renegotiate. Joining us is Max Civilli, our correspondent in Rome. Max, is there any indication that the events that we're seeing in Ukraine, which have resulted in an energy crisis in Europe, is sort of bringing governments down one by one, as we are seeing in Italy, and the rise of the far right?
Well, let me start by saying that government collapsing is quite a common thing in Italy. Since 1948, since Italy became a republic, so in about 74 years, Italy has had 68 governments, averaging almost one government a year. Having said that, what do we have to expect from the Meloni government. She's no longer the Meloni who back in 2016 said that the EU is rotten to the core, and the Meloni who was opposing the sanctions against Russia for the annexation of Crimea. She is now a pro-NATO, pro-EU leader, and her government will be a pro-NATO, a pro-EU leader. At least this is what she has repeatedly said over the past weeks. Now, if you have a look at her allies, I wouldn't be 100% sure about the posture the Italian government will hold in the coming months over the Ukraine conflict. Why? Because two of her major supporters, Silvio Berlusconi and Matteo Salvini, have been sympathetic to Putin over the past years, particularly Silvio Berlusconi, the leader of Forza Italia, the Forza Italia party, was portrayed in a video clip a few days ago in which he clearly said that the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, should be held accountable for the conflict in Ukraine. And he also clearly said that Vladimir Putin is one of his closest and dearest friends. What is going to happen in the coming weeks is to me is clear that Meloni will say that her government will be a pro-NATO and pro-EU executive. But let's see what Berlusconi and Salvini will have to say on the government's international posture.
Max, thank you very much indeed for that. Max Cividi there, our correspondent, joining us from the Italian capital, Rome. A new survey has found millions of households in Britain are skipping meals as they struggle with the country's deepening cost of living crisis. The findings show inflation returns to a 40-year high after food prices soar. Saeed Poreza reports from London.
It's been just a few weeks since the now resigned Prime Minister, Liz Truss, promised low taxes and high growth. Events have moved incredibly fast in Westminster that a new finance minister is now raising taxes and promising public sector cuts. The U-turns and counter-U-turns have come with a cost for the economy and the people. A new study has found that millions of households are skipping meals or struggling to put healthy foods on the table. Inflation is already at more than 10%. Energy and fuel prices are on the rise, putting a squeeze on Britain's finances.
Well, the start of all this is Brexit. Brexit led to Boris and incompetence. It led to falling living standards. It led to Liz Truss and further incompetence. And Britain basically voted to become poorer by leaving the EU. You can blame some of it on money printing at the Bank of England, inflation taking out, you know, and lowering living standards as well. So it's a combination of things.
A combination of things that have toppled two prime ministers in the span of 1 year.
It's been less than 2 months since Boris Johnson gave way to Liz Truss as prime minister, followed by the death of the Queen and a dramatic change in the country's economic outlook. And now, yet another leadership contest that could trigger even more economic and political instability.
And more instability means more people relying on charities, from food banks to keep their stomachs full, and warm rooms where those unable to heat their homes can take refuge in the cold months of winter. The new chancellor has curbed Liz Truss's flagship economic plan of a 2-year cap on energy bills to April next year. And at the end of this month, he's expected to announce a midterm economic policy that could spell out the beginning of another prolonged period of austerity.
Whoever takes over, Boris, Rishi, Mordaunt, who knows? But the outlook continues to be bad because inflation is still out of control. There's not the money or the government finances to give the public sector further wage rises to match that inflation. Strikes will continue. The fiscal position of the country remains dire. partly because we have a smaller economy because of Brexit. So there's no easy solution. There's no easy way out of this. The hole has been dug, and it's very deep and very difficult to climb out of.
Paying the price of that, ordinary Britons, as the Conservative Party races to choose its third leader and prime minister in 1 year, urgent help to those in need couldn't come any sooner. Sai Purisa, London.
Conservative British lawmakers are declaring who they're backing to become the party leader and next prime minister after Liz Truss's resignation left the position up for grabs. So far, former Prime Minister Boris Johnson and his former finance minister Rishi Sunak are leading the race with the most backing from MPs. Many British politicians doubt that Johnson will receive the 100 nominations he needs from lawmakers to run for the position. They are citing a lack of confidence in Johnson as his recent premiership was blighted with scandals and allegations of misconduct. Penny Mordaunt, who is popular with party members, is the only one to formally declare her candidacy for the Tory leadership so far. Liz Truss quit on Thursday after only 6 weeks in office. There were growing calls for her to resign over a host of issues, including her controversial economic package. Well, that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Dow Chemical and DuPont are American chemical corporations. These two chemical giants have become the number one companies in the chemical sector. Today, they make billions of euros in profit. But behind this resounding success lies a dark secret: toxic contamination and pollution, which has affected thousands, causing disabilities, cancers, and even death. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. For decades, Dow Chemical and DuPont factories have been secretly dumping their toxic waste into rivers, groundwater systems, and soil, and keeping the tragic consequences a secret. Sadly, the constant exposure to toxic waste spares no one, neither surrounding residents nor the company's employees. Stay with us as this week's documentary sheds light over years of lies and impunity through the analysis of samples in confidential documents.
At the end of the 60s, Leotis Jones was a prisoner in Holmesburg, a suburb of Philadelphia in the United States. A prisoner, but also a guinea pig for industry, like thousands of other inmates.
H-block. This is where all the medical testing and human experimentation was going on.
How many times have you taken that corridor?
Oh, man, about maybe 25, 30 times. You know, but there was different tests that they was running. And sometimes I was on like two tests at a time, you know?
Okay.
This practice was confidential at the time because multinational chemical companies came here to test the risks of their products. To earn a few dollars, the prisoners participated in several tests, but none of them knew what they were being given.
What they would do, they would put the tape and stick it and pull it, stick it and pull it, stick it and pull it. Then they would put a drop in the substance, whatever it was that was in it, on that area.
And what happened after?
All over my body, my skin pigmentation got light in certain areas.
How long did it last?
About a year, somewhere around there. And they had you signing a paper stating that it was informed consent, but it was just a paper to waive them from being liable if anything go wrong.
One company did everything they could to keep this a secret. They even paid Leotis Jones for his silence. Dow Chemical. The leading manufacturer of plastics in the world and the third largest manufacturer of pesticides, Dow Chemical has an annual turnover of $48 billion and 50,000 employees around the globe. In the wake of this chemical giant, there's an industry of staggering profitability, an industry in a frantic race to innovate. Each year, there are new toxic products reach the market. These multinationals all have one thing in common: a culture of secrecy.
You're following us.
Polluting lands, rivers, and groundwater. Behind the fumes of these factories, we have discovered tens of thousands of victims. In India, children are born with severe disabilities. In the U.S., those who have dedicated their lives to this industry.
Everybody wanted to go there because for the money, for the benefits, it was secure.
Are now paying the price.
Those guys are all dead, and I should have been. Why'd they lie?
Faced with these tragedies, the chemical giants have adopted a specific course of action: lack of transparency, cynicism, denial. In the meantime, they continue to reap the profits. In Holmesburg Prison, Dow experimented on the inmates with one of the most carcinogenic products in the world, dioxin. It's one of the molecules in Agent Orange, the powerful herbicide that Dow produced for the American Army during the Vietnam War. The Air Force dumped it on the Viet Cong for a decade. At the same time, the tests were being performed at Holmesburg. From that time on, Dow was already aware of the dangers of dioxin. The company put it in writing in this confidential note from June 1965. Dioxin is exceptionally toxic. Some months later, Dow would study its side effects on the prisoners.
Hey, man, what can I say? There's no way in the world, if they would have informed us back then, that we would participate. No. No, no, I wouldn't have. They were trying to cover it up. They wouldn't invite it up.
We found one of the doctors that performed the tests at Holmesburg in the 1960s. Today, he's an oncologist at Northwestern Hospital in Chicago. Sigmund Weitzman is preparing to retire. He is one of the few witnesses still alive.
Every day, I had a row of 20 convicts. They were coming in all day. Okay. So
all day long, people were coming in?
Oh, absolutely. It was a machine.
In 1967, Sigmund Weitzman was only 21 years old. He was an intern at Holmesburg. The senior physician overseeing the tests never told him the names of the products used on the prisoners. He only realized later that he had administered dioxin to human beings. We show him what Dow knew back then about the chemical.
This material is exceptionally toxic. No wonder it's confidential. This is 50 years old.
Yeah.
It's very upsetting.
This is the first time you read these documents?
Yes.
I'm
appalled. I'm just very... It's so casual. I also felt personally guilty that I was participating in something so horrible. You don't give people poison. It's just simple. You know, as if these people aren't people. They're just experimental animals. Nowadays, it would be criminal.
Dow was never prosecuted. When prisoners tried to take action against the company, the statute of limitations had expired. This multinational would not only poison inmates with dioxin, but also tens of thousands of people in Midland, Michigan, in the north of the U.S. Midland, the birthplace of Dow.
Here at the Dow Chemical Company in Midland, Michigan, revolutionary chemical killers.
This is where Agent Orange was manufactured. Its production created waste extremely high in dioxin. Dow secretly dumped this waste into the river that flows through the city. In 1981, one man would discover the truth.
We had a conclusion there that Dow was a major source, if not the only source, to the river, and certainly to the community, and that people were at risk.
At the time, Milton Clark was a toxicologist for the EPA, the government agency responsible for environmental protection. With his colleagues, he wrote a report condemning Dow's practices. But right before the report's publication, the corporation would succeed in pressuring the acting chief of the EPA in Washington. Pressured by his superiors, Milton Clark was forced to censor the report. The result? Pollution in Midland, Michigan would continue for 30 years with impunity. And the executives at Dow would continue denying the dangers.
There is no health problem in Midland. There is absolutely no evidence of dioxin doing any damage to humans.
In 2006, one woman would attack the multinational again. At the time, Mary Gade oversaw all the offices at the Environmental Agency in the Midland region. She had leverage. She'd been nominated by the President of the United States, George W. Bush. Newly appointed, she demands that more testing be done in the city.
We found these astronomically high levels of dioxin, levels that my staff think may be some of the highest levels ever found in the United States. One of the things that was astonishing to me when this came to my attention was that for almost 30 years, this very serious problem had not actually been addressed.
Where have you found these high levels?
So yeah, we found it in yards alongside the river system, parks where children play, where people launch their boats, where fishermen put their boats in the water. This is where people live. So I immediately called Dow senior officials and said, we're very concerned about these levels. We need you to take action. As that unfolded, the company was not happy. It's extremely expensive to clean up this much contamination, hundreds of millions of dollars, if not more.
To lodge a complaint, Dow goes directly to the White House.
I was asked on May 1st of 2008 to either resign or quit by the end of the day.
Okay. Were you surprised?
Yes, very much so. In my 30-some years of working in environmental protection and much of that spent in the government, I would have never expected that. Dow was acting in its own interests, so Dow was trying to make sure that it saved as much money as possible.
As a result of these maneuvers, for decades, thousands of people have lived surrounded by dioxin without knowing the risks. We wanted to meet these victims. But in Midland, it's hard to loosen tongues. Dow has supported the city for 120 years, and reminders are at every corner. At the bank, the stadium, the library, the public park, the high school. The shadow of the company is everywhere. Only one person agreed to break the code of silence. Alice Buchelter has spent most of her life here, near the river. This is where she raised her family.
We used to have all trails that went down through here. I don't even know if you can see any of them over here. But 18 years and the land is very fertile. And it was used for motocross trails and hiking trails and dune buggy trails and just, you know, recreation in the woods. For a kid, it was like a wonderland. It was, you know, an adventure. They could explore and they could build forts and they could do all those things.
No one advised you that there was dioxin down there?
Nope. We just thought we found a magical spot for us to play and raise a family.
For nearly 40 years, the Buchelter family would live here, blissfully unaware of their toxic surroundings. Every spring, the river floods their garden, bringing in a fresh wave of dioxin. Alice Buchelter would not discover the true extent of the contamination until 2007, when tests were conducted in her garden by the local environmental agency. The levels of dioxin were up to 17 times higher than the legal limit for toxicity.
My oldest daughter has autoimmune diseases.
You have five kids?
Mm-hmm.
How many of them do have autoimmune disease?
I would say all of them. Some to a lesser degree and some to a more severe degree. And my husband had a very malignant colon cancer. It was a real quick onset.
Her late husband, Herbert Buchelter, was a doctor. A few days before he passed away, he expressed a last wish.
He was brave enough to, when he was dying, to have his blood drawn when he didn't have very much blood left. Dioxin levels were taken the Thursday before he died on a Sunday. He was willing to do it to ascertain that there was a connection. The results of my husband's. This is his levels.
These are the actual breakdown.
Alex Buchelter's husband had 64.5 nanograms of dioxin per liter of blood, three times the U.S. average.
We had been married 46 years when he died, and would I have treasured 10 more years? Yeah. And, you know, that's been a major impact on my life.
The American Environmental Agency has finally forced Dow to clean the river. But the process has only just begun. It could take decades and cost hundreds of millions of dollars. However, no date is set for decontaminating neighboring yards, like Alice Buchelter's. Dow refused all our requests for an interview. The multinational merely sent us an email stating that we seek science-based solutions that protect human health while also contributing to the well-being of the local community. On the other side of the world, another contamination is wreaking havoc. As a result of one of the worst industrial catastrophes in history, thousands of children have been affected. But Dow has never dealt with it. It happened in India, in Bhopal. In 1984, the local chemical plant exploded, killing 20,000 people and releasing tons of toxic products. At the time, the factory belonged to Union Carbide, a pesticide giant that Dow would buy up in 2001. The site of the Bhopal explosion is still saturated with chemical pollution. Over the years, these products have spread into the city's groundwater systems. For 15 years, the inhabitants have demanded a full decontamination. In vain, Dow refuses to act. The decaying steel site is still accessible today. Here we meet Mr. Shuan, a former engineer. At the time, he was in charge of the storage of the chemicals in this laboratory.
There's so many chemicals still remaining in this quality control lab. Very few bottles are now at present. But after the disaster, this quality control lab was full of the chemicals, bottle, drums, and after 32 years, still they are lying.
Is that dangerous?
Yeah, it is dangerous because there's no proper care of these premises.
Among the products stored in the factory, there was lindane, an extremely toxic insecticide. Today it is forbidden all over the world. According to our guide, the soil surrounding the factory is full of it.
The whole area is highly contaminated. They're dumping all toxic waste effluent on the ground. Right now you can feel the smell of the benzene hexachloride on this spot. And it is dangerous to stay here for a long period.
Benzene hexachloride is the scientific name for lindane. We go down to the area of the spill to take some samples. The smell is unbearable. We'll have the soil analyzed. Just before leaving, Mr. Schwan shows us where the pesticides were made. Beads of mercury lie exposed in the open air. According to the World Health Organization, this is one of the top 10 most dangerous chemical products in the world. We take some more samples. The results of our two tests are astonishing. Inside the factory, the level of mercury is 5 million times higher than the environmental standard. At this level of concentration, the risks of developing liver, skin, or lung cancers are considerable. The levels of lindane are just as alarming, exceeding 100,000 times the standard level. This can provoke severe cases of cerebral degeneration. Yet only 20 meters away, we see children playing cricket on the contaminated ground. The chemical contamination stretches far beyond the walls of the factory. Toxic waste has penetrated the land and has polluted the water of many neighborhoods. up to 3 kilometers from the factory. 50,000 people live there. We went to take water samples to identify the molecules present in their wells, like in Shakya's family home. They've lived in this house for almost 30 years. The water they consume contains 1.9 micrograms of mercury per liter, 2 times the standard level of toxicity. The problem is, even in boiled water, mercury is still carcinogenic. In other areas of Bhopal, it's not mercury, but lindane that wreaks havoc on human lives. This is a problem in Preetnagar, a neighborhood situated 1 kilometer away from the factory. The municipality has had drinkable water since 2011, but for many years, the inhabitants have been drinking severely polluted water. That's the case for Rukmani and her 13-year-old daughter, Rachna. Since her birth, she's suffered from limited mental development and muscular dystrophy. She can neither talk nor stand up by herself. Rukmani, her mother, drank contaminated water every day during her pregnancy. A few months after Rachna's birth, a governmental study was conducted in the area. The levels of lindane were extremely high in the water, 17 times the World Health Organization limit. Due to her disabilities, Rachna has never been able to go to school. Every day she comes to the Shingari Rehabilitation Center. Without these daily exercises, she would be completely paralyzed today. Rashida B. is the founder of the center. She has watched all these children grow up.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته My dear sisters and brothers from all around the world I hope you're all doing well You're here with me for a better life I am Beta, a medical student that I'm really interested in Islamic topics especially in ethicals and morals issues and I like knowledge but I'm here to share my thoughts and my ideas with you I wish you enjoy it We're gonna go through our topic of today's episode. And I'm going to start with, some verses of a poem. Let's go. God has a gift, the gift of love, waiting to be unwrapped by each one of us. There is nothing on earth that fills the gap like the love God has for each woman and man. You may strive for wealth or aim for success, even find indulgent ways to seek happiness. All of this provides only a moment of satisfaction. Inside of us is a hunger only God can satisfy. God shows us the meaning and purpose of life, guides us to the eternity, our souls to suffice. So, as you are aware, in the history of human being, there were always a strong desire to strengthen the bond with Allah and to answer the blessing of love He's offering to us. As you saw just in this poem, it was like, okay, as you know, God is so kind towards human beings, and He is always showing His love by our blessings, by different aspects in our lives that if we are aware of them and if we open our eyes and our ears to this blessing, we would understand the love God is offering to us. But answering to this love that is offered by God to us is somehow something historical in the history of human being. So, as I told you, there were always a strong desire in human beings to, just strengthen the bond with Allah and to answer this blessing. So, and if, I'm going to go straightly to the point, worship is the key word in this topic and in this episode. Maybe this thought comes to your mind that apparently there is no relationship between worship and good morals because we are here to talk about a better life. We are here to talk about ethicals and morals issues for a better life. But actually, there is a profound connection between these two areas. I mean worship and morals. All right, now, I'm going to give you a break, so then we're going to come back and talk about this cliffhanger more and more. Stay tuned, dear listeners.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. This is Beta, and you're listening to me for a better life. We were talking about the connection between worship and morals in day-to-day life, and I'm going to give you some examples of holy imams' way of living, so that could be more touchable for you, and you will understand it clearer and better. And actually, this is my goal of today's episode. So, as I told you, you have to consider the connection and the relationship of prayer to morals. You know what? I'm going to recite a verse of the Holy Quran for you. يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسُ اعْبُدُوا رَبَّكُمُ الَّذِي خَلَقَكُمْ وَالَّذِينَ مِنْ قَبْلِكُمْ لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَّقُونَ O mankind, worship your Lord, who created you and those who were before you, so that you may be God-worthy. Surah Baqarah, verse 21st. You know, dear listeners, we're talking about worship and the connection of worship and morals. Worship has been mentioned many times in Holy Quran, and as you see, I just recited one of the verses of Quran, and it was a sign that, one of the command that is recited to the people is worshiping God. So, it means that there is a need in your soul, there is something deep in your heart that is asking for this worship. That is asking for an inner peace by means of worship. Worship means to obey, to submit to, you know, serve a being who is in complete control. Human beings have always worshipped. History tells us that people of the past built huge temples and worshipped many different gods. And, you know, in this episode, I'm not going to talk about why people are eager to make something to worship it. You know what? But the thing is, these proofs all show us that there is a strong desire to worship something. Something which is superior to us. The soul finds somehow peace in it, and this affects the personality and behavior of the person. Whenever a natural need is not fulfilled and is overlooked or ignored, there is a big impact on human behavior. And here is the connection that I'm going to elaborate more. There is a strong connection between your needs and your behavior. When you have some special needs in yourself that are not answered because of many reasons, it feels like, okay, there is something missing in your personality and you have to fulfill it. And this desire to fulfill your needs will show itself in your behavior. Worship of God is the essential ingredient of inner peace. And inner peace is the root of good morals. Right now, we're going to go for a short break and then we'll come back. Stay tuned, dear listeners.
We were given so many prizes. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor because we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Welcome back. This is For a Better Life, and I'm here talking about the connection between worshiping and morals. As I told you, there is a strong bond between these two areas because you are searching for a kind of inner peace for yourself in your life. And when you don't have this inner peace, you cannot behave humanly. There are many categories of worshiping God. So first of all, there are different categories of this worshiping. The first one is merely performing worship in a mechanical way. That, you know, I bet you've experienced this kind of worship in your life, and it is impossible if you just tell me that, okay, I've never experienced such a thing, because you are a human and humans share a lot. The second category of worshiping is worship for show off. I bet you've experienced this so much in your life because, for example, myself, when I was younger at school, we had, you know, just prayers in groups, and it was like, okay, I wanted to be better. I wanted to show off my praying or something like that. The third category is worship with sincerity. It earns reward. Actually, when you worship, it has a special reward, but the thing which is superior to this physical reward is somehow the spiritual aura that you will find through this worship. And the last and the fourth category of worship is worship with divine realization or vijdan. You know, it creates a spiritual aura. The worshipper experiences such pleasure that, cannot obtain it in anything else in the world. It causes one to become more proximate to the Almighty, to the God, and to find herself or himself in an aura that can't be found anywhere else. And also, I want to mention that the worship of the holy imams was from this category, which is a superior level of worshiping. And right now, I'm going to tell you a story from Imam Ali alayhi salam. Imam Ali fasted most of the days and was busy and praying all night long, so much so that the neighbors report hearing 1,000 takbiratul ihram or Allahu Akbar in one night. Many times this condition became so serious that people just, you know, started to think that his soul has departed from him. Try to be sincere, just try to be pure, and just try to worship according to your vijdan. that's all the time we had for today's episode, dear listeners. I wish you enjoy our topic of today, worshiping. And I just leave you in a warm embrace of God. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, He knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, He knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, He knows. Every thought I have and every word I share, He knows.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio.